Welcome to the Island Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Special guest on the podcast today, Lang Whitaker from NBA.com and formerly of Slam Magazine. Lang, how's it going?
What's up, man? How are you? I'm good.
I'm good. This will actually be running on the 4th of July, so happy 4th of July.
Happy 4th to you as well. Hope you enjoy it up there in beautiful Minnesota.
Here's the thing. My lady friend and I were driving down to Iowa.
All right.
For a Wu-Tang concert this weekend. It's like a 4th of July Wu-Tang concert in Iowa. Like, I feel like I'm filling out a Mad Libs.
I don't know. Iowa's a good place for the 4th of July because that's like the geographical center of the United States, right? Or somewhere close to that?
Yeah, it's pretty close.
Yeah. Seems like a good place. And Wu-Tang, I mean, they're for the kids, so.
Right.
That's good for the 4th.
Good family fun.
Yeah, that seems like a good time.
Yeah, it's good. I'm really looking forward to it. I got to see Wu-Tang 2 years ago, and not the same without ODB, but everyone was there, and it was a lot of fun. So I'm hoping to replicate that.
I went to a Wu-Tang concert maybe like 10 years ago, I don't remember all the details, but I'm pretty sure we left before Wu-Tang actually arrived.
Oh, really?
I went with a friend of mine. We were there for like an hour, 2 hours, and there was no real sign that Wu-Tang was going to actually be there, so we just went ahead and left. But but I did go to a Wu-Tang concert.
I had a similar experience earlier this year with Public Enemy.
Yeah.
They brought like 50 rappers with them. And so it was like a 3-hour build-up, and then they came out on stage, they did a song, and then, like, this is not an exaggeration, Flava Flav talked for 35 minutes after the first song, and we were just like, all right, this is over. Like, let's just leave. Like, it was just, at that point, we had been standing for so long, and we weren't nearly drunk enough to endure a 35-minute talk from Flava Flav and then wait out for more music. It was pretty brutal. But other than that, it was a great night.
Many moons ago when I worked in Atlanta and I worked for the weekly paper there and I covered music, and I went to a concert one time and I ran into Professor Griff from Public Enemy, like just in the lobby of the I don't even remember what show it was, but in the lobby of the venue I ran into Griff, and so I introduced myself, and he gave me his business card, which was pretty awesome just because it was like a business card that said Professor Griff, and it had the Public Enemy logo on it.
Right.
I wish I still had that. That was a pretty good thing to hang on to.
Oh, I would have kept that in my wallet forever. That would be phenomenal.
Yeah.
You're a celebrity now.
Well, I wouldn't go that far.
You're on TV. You're in commercials. How did that come about? That's congratulations. You're in the Kevin Durant commercial.
Yeah, for the KD6. Long story short is a guy who you know as well, Bethlehem Scholes,
yes,
a.k.a. Nathaniel Friedman, worked on that commercial. And he called me one day and he was like, he was in New York. He was like, hey, we needed a sportscaster. We need someone to audition for that. We're auditioning people. Do you want to come audition? And so I went. I was like, sure. Like, I'm not an actor, but I could play one on TV. So I went to they're in New York. So I just hopped on the subway, went down, read some lines for the director and some other people. And about a week later, they called and said, hey, you got the part. So that's how it happened.
That's
awesome. Yeah, we filmed it like toward the end of the regular season. And then it dropped during the NBA draft. So I actually had a line or two and they got cut. Oh. And then I think there's like a shorter version of it also that's airing now, that it's even the one that aired during the draft was like a minute, then there's a shorter one now, I think. But all told, I'm just glad. I think it's a cool commercial, and I'm glad I'm just able to say I'm associated with it. Because, I mean, any commercial where Iceman's the commissioner of a draft, yes, is pretty awesome. So
yeah, that's the thing. It's a great idea. Like, it's, KD's no longer second at something. You know, he had that big kind of like little mini rant about he's always second in this, second in that.
Right.
And so he got to be the first pick in a shirts versus skins, and George Gervin's the commissioner. Like, that was—it's just a really cool commercial concept. He's got some great commercials. I love the—I don't know, maybe it's kind of a stupid one, but the one where he was like a cop and like and they like said someone had got dunked on and he was a suspect or something, or he matched the suspect's description. Like, he's in some good commercials.
He has, yeah. I think He's underrated as an actor. Can we say that?
Oh, sure.
I thought you have probably seen. I have not. Thunderstruck.
Thunderstruck is great. I really. I mean, I know, but my bar is pretty low. But I really, yeah. I really enjoyed Thunderstruck. It's a very good like Mike type of movie.
Right. It was on the other day, and I didn't have time to sit and watch it, but I'm sure I will at some point because that's something else you and I share. I think is an affinity for. Movie some people might classify as bad.
Yeah, I feel like we're in a very small club.
I tend to, and maybe it's because we both have similar jobs, but I tend to have the TV on in the background while I'm working.
Yes.
And I don't want to watch, you know, The Usual Suspects. I don't want to watch something where you have to pay a lot of attention.
Yeah.
I don't want to get sucked into the plot. I don't want any of that stuff. I just want to have something on that I can just kind of have on and forget about in the background. And so that's, you know, if Independence Day is on, that's on my TV because I've seen it 1,000 times. I don't have to pay attention. I can just kind of look up and say, oh, okay, right, you know, the Jeff Goldblum, da, da, da. And then, you know, I don't have to pay that much attention. So it's kind of that way with any movie that's on. I just kind of flip around and try to find something that I've seen and put that on in the background. And yeah. I know that's sort of what you do too.
Yeah, exactly. Like this morning, for example, I was, you know, searching out news for looking for stuff to blog about, and one of the Resident Evil movies were on, and I've seen the first one, and then I've seen parts of like a couple others, but there was one, and I just kept like every time I looked up, there was something coming at the screen, and it took me a while to realize like, oh, this was meant for a 3D movie like experience. Like that's why this thing looks so weird every time I look up, is that this is a 3D movie, and then I became a little more intrigued, but had to curb my attention towards that. But yeah, that's my background noise. Like Die Hard is probably my best movie to write to because you already know all the lines and you know everything that's going to happen because you've seen it so many times. So you can kind of just shut off, still be entertained by the movie, and yet focus on your work.
Right. I'm more with Die Hard too. But
okay.
I would say, I think I did a post about this at Slam Online back in the day, and we called them background movies.
Yeah, because I remember that.
That's what they are, just background movies. And that's important to have. You can tell if a movie was originally made to be in 3D, but if there's a scene where like someone takes a yo-yo and throws it at the camera, or if there's like a guy with a pool cue and he's like, you know,
right,
practicing toward the lens. There's always something where it's like, oh, okay, now you realize there's always a tell.
Yeah, in this Resident Evil movie, there's this giant like battle axe flying towards the camera. I was like, oh, that's weird. And then it happened again. I was like, huh. And then like a bullet was shot right at the camera. I was like, oh, I get it now.
I liked when you saw it and you said, huh.
Like, oh, that's a weird cinematography choice for the director, but whatever.
We need more scenes where things fly at the camera.
Yeah, I would like it to happen in movies that aren't 3D just to keep me on my toes. Like, just so I have to start wondering, like, I have to go research it.
I think one of the, what's the movie with The Rock where he goes to, like, the center of the earth?
Oh, there's a little like kid in it. Race to Witch Mountain?
No, it's got a kid in it, and Journey to the Center of the Earth?
Is that The Rock, or is that Brendan Fraser?
No. Oh, The Rock's in the sequel.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry. The Rock's in the sequel where they, and Michael Caine, and they go to some island.
That's right.
The first one, yeah, with Brendan Fraser. That's the first one of those where I was watching the movie, and I realized it was supposed to be 3D, because they were like in a cave or something, and they're like, ooh, look at these fireflies, and you're watching, and you're like, it's not that spectacular. Then you realize, okay, I'm missing something here. I'm missing a D, and it takes away from my experience.
Speaking of experiences, here's a professional segue. You have a new job experience. Well, kind of new. You're at NBA.com. You made the leap from the Lynx Slam Online to NBA.com. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, I work for NBA.com, which is part of NBA Digital, which is part of Turner Sports, which is part of a big company now. So yeah, I was at Slam full time for about 10 years, I think, and then the last two, I was a contributing editor to Slam, and I did some other stuff too. I wrote for GQ. I did stuff for NBA TV and NBA.com. I still did the podcast with Sekou for NBA.com, Sekou Smith, and then about 4 months ago, maybe I went full-time with them. So it's been a lot of fun, and it's, you know, I did enough stuff for them already. It just kind of made sense.
Yeah.
And now Saker doesn't have an excuse when we need to do a podcast. I can get him on the phone or whatever all the time now, so we can track, as long as we can track down Rick Fox, right, we're able to do our podcast every week. But that's easier said than done sometimes.
Has it changed your work experience at all? Is there anything different than what you did before?
Well, like the last 2 years, I didn't have to write every single day.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, now I'm like sort of running the blog, the All Ball blog for NBA.com. So I got to make sure we have stuff up there and new stuff and stay on top of things.
You keep throwing up Ricky Rubio videos. I will be there all day.
Well, I've been able to do some stuff. Like I went to Los Angeles last week to the Adidas did a shoot with a bunch of different guys, and so I was able to sit and talk to Ricky and some other guys, and so I'm going to kind of run that stuff out the next week or two. But so yeah, yesterday I put up a Q&A with Ricky that was it was pretty good. It was interesting to hear him talk about some of that stuff that, you know, he said he still puts on his jersey and before games and he thinks to himself, wow, I can't believe I'm in the NBA. Like he like genuinely is still like you know, is caught up in the fun of it, and it's kind of neat to hear that from an NBA player.
It was kind of cool. Like, it was just a little thing, but I think it was something like the equipment manager for the Wolves is always asking him, hey, do you need new shoes? He's like, no, not yet. And it's just like, I love shoes. I mean, you clearly love shoes. Like, if I had a chance to get just a new pair all the time at the snap of a finger, I would absolutely do that.
I mean, he has companies pay him money to wear their shoes, and he doesn't. He said he wears about three pairs a season.
Oh, my God.
He wears the same shoe every day in practice. He likes them to be broken in. He doesn't want, you know, but I know other players wear, like, a new pair of shoes every day.
Yeah.
You know, so I guess it's just personal preference. He said when he was a kid that he would I asked him if that was true when he was a kid. Like, would he even when he was, you know, because when you're a kid, you're always saying, oh, I want the new shoe, I want the new shoe. And he said he still back then would kind of want the new ones, and he would bring them home and clean them every day and make sure they looked good and everything. But he would still only play in, I mean, because he was playing as a professional when he was a kid.
Right.
He would still only play in, you know, one or two pairs of shoes a season. So yeah, I thought that was pretty interesting to hear him talk about that. He was actually looked like he put on. I'm gonna make a bold prediction here. He might be included in Muscle Watch 2013.
Really?
By the start of the season, because he's put on some muscle. Like, his shoulders were big. His arms were looking big. This is the first time he said he's really worked hard on working out in the off season. He said he was kind of getting pushed around a lot last year, so he thought maybe it's time. He said he had always thought it was important to kind of not get too big because he wanted to be quick and fast, and now he thinks he just got pushed around enough last year that he thinks it's time to put on some muscle. So he was wearing a tank top, and I was joking, oh, of course you're wearing a tank top because you want to show off. And he was like, oh, yeah, you can tell, right? So he's kind of proud of it. Maybe we can get Ricky in Muscle Watch 2013.
Hey, I'm in. The more coverage for him, the better. You're kind of you're in a cool position of just with your career and the opportunities you've kind of made for yourself. You've kind of seen Ricky grow up. Like, you've covered him for a long time.
Yeah, it was at the 2006 finals, I believe, and I was talking to a journalist from Spain, and he said, hey, yep, there's this kid, you should just keep an eye on him, named Ricky Rubio. And so I, you know, went home and Googled him and everything, and at the time he was 15 years old, and he was playing in the ACB in Spain. Right.
which is crazy. Like, yeah, that's nuts. I mean,
that's probably, the ACB is probably the second best league to the NBA in the world.
Right.
And he was playing, at the time he was playing, I don't know, 7-8 minutes a game, not a lot, but he was still playing. And so I thought, wow, that's a pretty amazing story. So I tried to keep an eye on it. There wasn't a lot on YouTube at the time of him, and there's hardly anything really. So but then that summer he played, I think it was in the under 18 championships, yeah, and he had a game where he had like 49 points and 20 rebounds and 15 assists, something crazy. And I was like, great, so now he's going to like break really big before we can get to him. But I worked on it for like 6 months. He wasn't doing interviews. His parents had said, and the team had decided, he wouldn't talk to any media until he was 18. And I just kept kind of banging on the door, and finally they said he would talk. So I went over there and spent a day, 2 days with him, his mom and his dad, his brother and his sister, in Barcelona. Went to their apartment, hung out. The mom made us all coffee, and then we went to dinner with the family. And the funny part was that it was like a Friday night or a Saturday night, and his team had a game at noon the next day. So his brother had a game that night. His brother was playing for like the B team of one of the teams. So his brother had a game that night, and he wasn't going to go to his brother's game because they didn't want him to be out too late with the game or early. Because the game, I guess he had to be there at like, you know, 8 a.m. the next day or whatever. So he and his friends stayed at home and were just going to play video games. I went with his parents and his brother and sister to see his brother play. But at the thing in L.A. last week, Ricky was there and he had a friend with him, and his friend was like, "Hey, you were in Barcelona," and it was the kid who played video games with Ricky.
Oh, that's weird.
And I was like, "Whoa, I totally remember you now." So it was. I guess he still has the same friends around him that he had back then. But
that's not your typical professional basketball player story of, "Oh, I've got a game tomorrow. I need to get to bed early tonight."
I know. Yeah. Well, I mean, he couldn't drive. You know,
right.
So. So it was. Yeah, that was the first time I met him, and it's kind of gone as how I thought it would go. You know, I mean, when I saw him play back then, immediately, even when he was 16 playing with adults, you just saw him playing, you're like, all right, this guy is totally going to be in the NBA one day. Like, he's so good.
Yeah.
For that age, and you just knew if things kept going the way they were going, he would be a good NBA player. I just hope he stays healthy. I know that's been the issue for the last, I guess, his first two seasons,
because right.
He's missed big chunks of both seasons. But I think if he stays healthy and keeps getting better, well, you agree, he's fun to watch.
Yeah, he's very fun to watch. I mean, I've said this before, but like there were moments where during his rookie season, and it took me like, I don't know, maybe 10 games to adjust of seeing him live, where I would see a pass develop, and I'm like, oh, he started. And as soon as I started to like get halfway through my thought of, oh, he missed that guy, he would already have been whipping the pass. And then at a certain point, I was like, of course he sees things that I see. Like, he sees things that no one sees, like three steps ahead. Like, I need to stop thinking, like trying to think that,
yeah,
like I see something that Ricky Rubio doesn't. Like, if the pass is there, it's there, and he knows it.
The thing to me that kind of sealed it when I saw him play was, and I still remember this like clear as day, there. He brought the ball down like kind of in a, like a transition, and he had a guy on him defending him, and then a teammate set a pick for him, and instead of just running like directly at the pick and going around the pick, he kind of went away from the pick a couple of steps and then looped back around into the pick, and it made it at such an angle that the defender was, instead of just being right on, the defender was kind of coming from a different angle, and it made the pick like 50% more effective. Just because he took two steps to his left instead of just going directly at the pick. And I saw that and I was like, wow, like how do you know how to do that?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I mean, I remember when I played JV basketball when I was in high school, and we were at camp in the summer, and we had spent, you know, the year I played JV, we went 0-12. We were terrible.
Oh, no.
But the coach taught us all this stuff, and one of the things was always, if your man overplays, you cut backdoor. You know,
right.
That was something they just drilled into us for the entire season. So we went to summer camp, and there was a kid playing with us who was just out of middle school, but he was good enough to play with us, and they were kind of like trying him out with us. And I still remember there was a play where some guy was overplaying me. I cut back door, and as I did it, I thought, well, this guy's new to the program. He's not going to know, you know, if you're overplayed to look for the backdoor pass. But I cut back door, and I look up, and the ball is like in my hands. So I think there's just guys who just get it,
yeah,
and just have it in them, and some of us will never have that.
Right.
And that's what separates the great from the okay, and then the fair to middling.
Yeah.
Like I was.
Absolutely. you've also, like, kind of like following the same lines of following guys' career paths, because of Slam, you guys do so many things with high school players.
Yeah.
That you've – who's been, like, the high school player to pro – that has maybe done like the Hoops Diary or you know, something along those lines, where like you've kind of just enjoyed his progression the most?
LeBron. Yeah, I mean, we had Ryan Jones did a feature on LeBron, I think, going into his junior year at St. Vincent St.
Yeah,
Mary.
That sounds right.
And then he was the high school diary at the time. And even back then, there was a lot of people who were like, you know, this guy's overrated. He's not going to make it. And, you know, just kind of being on the inside of having heard about him for so long and seeing him play for so long and all that stuff, it was kind of hard to after having seen stuff, you know, clips and things like that, you were like, well, this guy's totally going to make it. Like, he's his body's incredible. He's got the intellect to be an amazing player. I think, you know, the one thing you don't know is how the work ethic is going to be.
Yeah.
And he's obviously got that. Somebody on Reddit yesterday posted a photo of LeBron like working out at a fitness club somewhere. Like, I don't even remember where it was. The guy was like, hey, LeBron showed up at my fitness club in my neighborhood, and there was LeBron on an exercise bike with a bunch of old people behind him. I mean, it just, you know, he was wherever he was, and he was like, I got to get a workout in. So he's got that too, and it's just been pretty awesome to see him become what he has become. I mean, I at the very least, you know, this guy can be an NBA player.
Right.
You just don't know how good he's going to be, and for him to become what he has become, it's been pretty impressive to watch.
I don't know if you can really answer this, but who has been the one, like, you've been most disappointed didn't make it? Like, did Derek Character do the high school diary for you guys? Or was he just, I know he had a couple of stories in there.
Eddie Curry did.
Oh, Eddie Curry, right, yeah.
Yeah, he was high school diary. I'm trying to think of some of the other guys. I mean, there was a lot of names, you know, like, you think of Eddie Curry, Lenny Cook.
Right, Lenny Cook.
There was all kinds of guys like that who... I've always mostly done the NBA, so
yeah.
I was sort of just, I a lot of times I would kind of read those diaries the same as anyone else would. Ryan and Ben Osborne and some of the other guys were kind of more on the high school trail and following those guys and keeping up with those guys. We've had a pretty good record, I think, of finding guys who've turned into, you know, at the very least solid NBA players. Even you know, when you say a guy doesn't make it, you know, a guy like, say, I don't know, Marvin Williams was the high school diary.
Right.
I mean, can you really say a guy doesn't make it when he makes something like, you know, $50 million over the course of a career?
Yeah, I think he's still getting like $8.5 million this year, so he's doing okay.
It's kind of hard to like argue that, or when people say like Stephon Marbury was a disappointment, you're like, really? He made, I've been to the house or the apartment where he grew up in Coney Island, and the guy's made $200 million.
Right. He bought a jet at one point, right?
Yeah, it's kind of hard to say that he didn't make it. So. Obviously, yeah, you might not have won a title. You might not have made enough All-Star teams to keep people happy. But, yeah, it's been pretty good. I mostly did the NBA. I did the NBA rookie diaries through the years.
Right.
So I would, you know, get in touch with Carmelo or different guys. And Drew Gooden was one of the guys. And so I was telling someone about this the other day, doing that back in the early 2000s, which doesn't seem like that long ago, but you know, it was before there was text messaging.
Right.
It was before you could get email to your phone. So sometimes trying to track some of those guys down was not the easiest thing in the world. I mean, you just had to call their phone over and over and hope that they would answer. It's become easier now with the advent of technology and Twitter and all this other stuff. But it's been fun, man. It was a lot of fun at Slam for a long time. And then it was just kind of time to do something else. So I'm loving doing stuff for NBA.com and getting to throw Mountain Dew bottles at people at the finals.
Yeah, let's talk about that. I went through a wide range of emotions at the finals. I think this was game two.
I don't remember. One of them.
Yeah, it was either one or two. Those were the two that I went to. And this empty soda bottle hits me on the back, and I look up, and there's like not like where we were, there are not many people behind us. I'm like, what the hell? Like, I was pissed. I was pissed that someone threw trash at me, and like looked around, and like I look back, and I'm like glaring at whoever I can try to lock eyes with, like just like, oh my god, I'm gonna mean mug you like you've never been mean mugged before. And I look around, and like nothing, and so I'm just like, whatever. And then I kind of like look over to my left, and you're just like grinning at me. And I'm like, and I was like, is that you? And like, yeah. And you said something about for like not being on the podcast yet. And then I felt like such an ass. Like, I just felt like, oh my god, why did I get mad at that? Like,
I don't drink soda. at home. I never drink soda. And yeah. So I was kind of tired. Maybe it was game one because I was just tired from traveling all day.
Okay.
So I went to the concession stand and bought a Mountain Dew because I figured that'll wake me up for the next 5 days. So I drank the Mountain Dew, and then I was just going to like put it on the ground, and I saw you sitting. You were like five seats to my right, maybe?
Yeah, that sounds right.
And I was like, hey, I'll just toss this over there. But the best part, yeah, was totally your reaction.
Furious! I was so mad, and I had been traveling for a few. Like I had been in Indianapolis, I had been in Miami for a while, and it doesn't. I mean, it's not a bad thing to have to travel for what we do. But for me, like I was like kind of wanted to be home at that point, and so it would take me a little bit to get in the game. And I was like, oh my god, people here are throwing trash. I am just gonna destroy Miami fans.
We have had some. I mean, look, yeah, I agree. My mom will say, "Don't work too hard." I'm like, "Mom, I'm writing about basketball. Like, I'm not, I'm not digging ditches somewhere." But travel can be a trying experience at times. Is that fair to say?
Yo, for sure.
And we have some awesome slam travel stories through the years, mainly because managing editor Susan Price would always book us on connecting flights because they were cheaper.
Yeah.
So. The one year, the best one ever was one year, I think it was when the All-Star Game was in New Orleans, and we were supposed to fly New York, Cincinnati, New Orleans. The flight was delayed in New York. We end up in Cincinnati, and we missed the flight to New Orleans. But for some reason, it was myself, Khalid Salam, Sam Rubenstein, Ben Osborne. For some reason, Ben was given a ticket to fly to Atlanta to New Orleans, and the other three of us weren't. And so we're sitting around the Cincinnati airport. The woman from Delta says, "Guys, sorry to have to do this, but we're gonna have to. You're gonna have to stay here tonight in Cincinnati. You know, we'll put you in a hotel, and we'll figure that out later. Just hang on a minute. In the meantime, here's some meal vouchers." She hands us this receipt, and it's a meal voucher for $7. And I think it was just like the whole situation caught up with us, and Khalid looks at the woman and says, "What kind of man eats a $7 meal?" So that was always that's one of my favorite lines of all time. What kind of man eats a $7 meal?
I had a pretty like kind of a similar experience with the All-Star Weekend this year in Houston. I had connected through Chicago, and the flight it was an illegal flight. Basically, I had never heard of this, and they could have just been making this up. Maybe they just wanted to stay in Chicago for the night, but. But our flight was delayed like 3 or 4 hours because there was a mechanical problem. And then they fixed it. And then we had to wait another hour because it was like 85 degrees in the plane. So they had to like cool it down with fans or whatever. So they board us. They close the doors. And as they're pulling back from the gate, they had another mechanical problem. But I guess legally you can't reopen the doors or something. I mean, they were going to have to reopen the doors and let us off. And then you couldn't like reboard the plane or something along those lines. So they said it's an illegal flight. And so I stayed in Chicago overnight. I got up and took a 5:30 a.m. flight out of Chicago into Houston. By the time I got there, I checked in my hotel. There was a problem with my reservation, so I had to I had to wait like a couple hours for a room.
Right.
I had to go into like the lobby bathroom and wash up, which was a great experience. And then like I ran to like, I don't know, shoot around or practice for the rookie game or something like that. And so at a certain point, like my dad called me in the afternoon, he's like, "How's the All-Star Week?" And I was like, "This is awful. This is the worst experience." I had to like realize like I had to put things in perspective a little bit, but it took me a little bit to calm down.
Once I spent the night in Dulles Airport in Washington, D.C., trying to get to All-Star Weekend. Once that trip to New Orleans, we were there in Cincinnati, and so many people got stuck in Cincinnati that they just kind of created a flight to Atlanta and put us all on it.
Oh, wow.
We didn't even have, like, assigned seats or anything. They just put us all on this plane. I told Sam and Khalid, I was like, "Look, let's just try to get closer to the south. Worst case scenario, if we get to Atlanta and we can't get to New Orleans, we can rent a car and drive. It's like a 9-hour drive or something." So we ended up in Atlanta, and then we couldn't get a flight to New Orleans, but we eventually got a flight to Baton Rouge that night, and we flew to Baton Rouge and rented a car and drove to New Orleans from there.
Oh my God.
Which is like an hour or so from there. And then, but in all of that, Sam and Khalid's luggage got lost, obviously, because there was so much stuff going on. So the other great moment of that trip was we go, Sam has to go buy a shirt because he didn't have any clothes. So there was a store called Rubenstein's, which Sam's last name. So he's like, well, I have to go here. So he goes in there and he buys a shirt, doesn't try it on. And then that night we leave to go to the game and Sam walks out wearing the tightest shirt any human has ever put on. And he had to wear it for the entire evening. He looked like he lost a bet covering the All-Star weekend. But it's been a lot of fun travel stories, and that's part of the game.
Yeah. Let's talk free agency real quick to make it a little more current. We've seen some crazy free agencies before. Between, like, the Brooklyn deal, Bargnani to the Knicks, this whole issue with Andre Iguodala getting a contract offer and then having it rescinded. This has been kind of a wild couple of days, right?
I think the most interesting thing is there's not any like huge impact franchise changing free agents.
Right.
You know, I mean, I guess Iguodala maybe is the biggest one out there. His contract looked like for a while it was going to be the biggest, other than Dwight Howard. But,
right.
But I think Dre's looked like it was going to be the biggest deal until that got yanked off the table last night, as odd as that whole situation was. I don't know that any of these guys. I mean, is signing Kyle Korver to a 3-year deal going to totally change your franchise? I mean, it's a lot of these, the movement and all this stuff is kind of about rotation guys and bench guys. So it's still fun to watch and it's fun to like try to keep up with. It's almost impossible to try to keep up with it. But I do think for NBA fans, this is a pretty fun time and interesting time.
I think especially because like it, like couple that in with the draft, and it is like this is very much a let's get role players year.
Yeah. I mean, and you look at like Miami and you look at San Antonio and you see why role players are so important, and having the right role players is so important. But you know, for a team like the Hawks or a team like Minnesota, like a team that's trying to be a playoff team, I think it's interesting to see them. Are any of these moves going to be enough or to get them to the next level? Not even to a championship level, just the next level they're trying to get to. I'm not sure that it is. I think, you know, and then there's also all this time talk of tanking.
Right.
And Andrew Wiggins in 2014 and all this other stuff. So I think what we're going to end up seeing is some of these teams, the two teams that were in the finals haven't really done anything.
I mean,
Splitter re-signed, but other than that, it's just kind of staying pat for them, and the best teams in the league aren't doing a whole lot of stuff.
I think what'll be interesting is like the 1 or 2 year contracts that are given out because the salary floor is like 90% of the salary. Like you have to spend at least 90% of the salary cap now, and there are some teams like Utah, like Cleveland, probably Atlanta that are going to have so much cap room that you're going to see a kind of a Chris Humphreys $12 million a year for a guy that is just going to make you scratch your head. And I think that's going to be really funny.
We were talking about it on the podcast that I do yesterday. We were saying if you were a team like in that situation, would you give Andrew Bynum a 1 year, you know, $12 million, $15 million, a big deal like that? If he's not going to work out, like he's saying, you know, would you just say, hey, well, we have to spend the money because we have to reach, we have to hit a minimum threshold. So would you just go, if you were a team, would you sign Bynum for a 1 year deal like that?
Yeah, I guess if you're Atlanta. And you miss out on Dwight, and let's say Josh Howard or Josh Smith goes to Detroit or Houston or something like that. And now you've got all this cap space. I mean, you kind of have to say like, yeah, sure, we'll go buy him for a year. Let's see what happens.
You know, I brought this up on our podcast yesterday. If I was Phoenix, I would spend money on Bynum, or I would spend money on Greg Oden or one of those guys.
Yeah.
You know, the guys with the history of injury. If you're Phoenix and you have Aaron Nelson, who's kind of recognizes the best trainer in the league, and they've had this history of taking guys with injury histories and making them healthy and keeping them healthy, like why not take a gamble on something like that, you know, at least for a shorter contract, a 1 or 2 year contract, and let you know, hey, look, we've done this before, we could do this again. So I don't know, I think there could be some, there's still a lot of interesting guys out there. I mean, And no one's talking about like Al Jefferson
or right, yeah.
Paul Millsap. There's really good players who are available for some of these teams, but I think everyone's kind of waiting to see what happens with Dwight, and then everything else is going to fall into place.
Yeah, like here, you know, the right. question is you know, are they going to match Pekovic's offer sheet?
Right.
It seems like yes, but like it's funny how Pekovic has gotten all this attention, and then you look and like Al Jefferson got some interest from the Bobcats, but nobody else is really seemingly yeah. like looking. I'm like, I love Pekovic, but Al Jefferson's better than him. Like, why yeah. isn't he? Why isn't he the hot commodity right now?
I mean, and I think people argue that like Millsap and Jefferson, like which of the two is better?
right.
That duo, you know, like, and then no one's like, I know people talking about Pekovic. No one's talking about Kirilenko, really.
Yeah,
you know, he's a solid player. I would take him on a in a 8-man rotation for any team. It's just kind of interesting to see all this stuff play out and how all this stuff fits together. And I mean, also all the coaching stuff going on this offseason. It just seems like it's been a really busy past couple of weeks for the NBA, more so maybe than usual. I don't know. Does it feel like that to you? Maybe more than last year?
Yeah, it does. It does. It just feels like it's more chaotic. Like whether there's more movement or more rumors or not. Like it just feels more. Panicked than everything, and maybe yeah. that's like kind of figuring out the collective bargaining agreement and the loopholes and everything, so you're trying to get there first to take right. advantage of it. But yeah, it definitely seems more hectic to me.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, there's still like, you know, like what are the Hawks gonna do? What are the Bobcats gonna do? There's a lot of teams that you kind of just don't really know what yeah. direction.
Like throw the Bucks in there. Like they've got yeah. Monte and Brandon Jennings, and they lost out on really, I feel like they lost out on getting good value in return for J.J. Redick, who was,
right.
you know, so sought after, and they lost Mike Dunleavy, and maybe they're going to go try to sign J.R. Smith. Like, there's just a lot of, like, so from those, like, middle to lower teams, there's just a lot of weirdness going on.
Yeah, I also like watching, like, some of the better teams, like the Clippers, which is, seems weird to say, is one of the Clippers, but to see, you know, the Clippers were a really good team, and they could use, you knew watching them, they could use a couple of pieces, and then they go get J.J. Redick and Jared Dudley, and you say, wow, those are pretty good pickups. That's yeah. that's kind of exactly what they needed.
And then and the whole Doc Rivers thing. Like, that's a weird, like, we had a coach traded. That's weird.
Exactly. But then you look at a team like Indiana, and you're like, wow, these guys, you know, obviously they get Granger back, so they'll be better, but they really need a backup point guard. What are they going to do? And I think there's a couple of things like that, like Indiana, how do they sort of expand their bench and,
right.
and get a little bit deeper? How does Chicago add to what they have?
Right.
You know, and Mike Dunleavy seems like a pretty good fit for what they're trying to do. So I think there's a couple of situations like that where you look at it and you can kind of say, these are above average to contending teams. They don't have to do a lot, but what they do is pretty important, and so it's kind of interesting to see how they fill those holes.
Yeah, definitely. You mentioned the Suns trainer earlier. I know there are rules and there are contracts and everything. How have we not gotten like a Celtic Pride situation of stealing the trainer and making him work on your team for like a couple of days? Like, that's, you know, kind of brings it full circle here, but that's what we got to have, some kind of situation like that. Like, clone that guy or something. Maybe I'm just sensitive to it because the Timberwolves have lost out on so many injuries over the last couple of years, but like, it's crazy how that approach is still so new.
I brought this up, I think, during the finals to someone, that there's obviously a salary cap and luxury tax for players, but there's not for front office.
Right.
There's not for basketball operations staff. Like, I'm surprised some team hasn't tried to make him a huge offer. You know, a guy like that who has this history of keeping guys healthy and treating injuries in such a way that guys are able to contribute for a long time. Like, you would think, and maybe they have, and he likes Phoenix. Who knows? But
yeah.
It seems like, you know, some team would make him a huge offer to come work with them.
Yeah, it's funny how the way the league has progressed, it seems like perimeter scoring and health are the two most important things you can have right now.
yeah, that's interesting. Perimeter scoring obviously is a big thing. I think, knowing what we, the way the league has become, I think if you're like a high school kid, just shoot threes.
Right.
Do nothing else. Just go stand in the corner and work on corner threes.
You can make $50 million in your career just being a good corner three-point shooter.
Yeah, if you can be like 6'4", maybe, yeah. Like that's 6'3", 6'4", and shoot jump shots, you could have a very long, lucrative career.
And maybe just hold heavy dumbbells to stretch your arms a little bit, just so you have a good wingspan. That'll trick guys into thinking you have defensive potential.
I'm working on all that stuff with my son already. Oh, 7 months old. Trying to make him left-handed. I hand him everything on the left side.
Yeah.
I figure at the worst, he could be a lefty reliever in the majors.
Yeah, because those guys are super valuable.
Yeah, because you only pitch to one batter a game. Right. You know, like, and you pitch like every third day, and they bring you in to face one left-hander, and then you're out of the game, and you can have like a 20-year career in the Major League Baseball, make a couple million a year. It's being a specialist. And that's kind of what the NBA has become, is they have all these specialists who fill these different roles. And, you know, that also speaks to the systems that teams run.
Yeah.
You know, San Antonio has their system. They look for a certain guy who does this or does that. I did a Spurs story in Slam years ago where I went to San Antonio for like a week and talked to everyone. I was talking to R.C. Buford, the GM, and I remember we were talking about, I think it was when they had Nesterovic, and we were talking about like why they targeted Nesterovic as a guy that they wanted. And he said, well, for the system we run, we know we need a guy who can protect the rim. We wanted a guy whose specialty is protecting the rim, and I can't remember, like hitting 14-footers or something. And Nesterovic had those two particular skill sets, and they went and got him, and they plugged him in, and they won, you know? So that, I think, really speaks to the continuity that the Spurs have and other teams don't have. You know, changing all the coaches, changing GMs, the philosophy changes, what you look for in a roster changes, and it kind of, maybe that's sort of what creates this summer of chaos that we're having right now.
No, I completely agree. Well, Lang, I know you're a busy guy. The Hang Time podcast is great. Yuseika do a great job. Check all your stuff out. All Ball blog on, that kind of sounds like the Bob Law blog. From Arrested Development.
It's not bad.
The All Ball blog on NBA.com. Lang, you're one of my favorites. Thank you so much for being on the show.
You're one of my favorites too, Zach. Thank you.